Thank you all for joining us this afternoon for the Delmar Pharmaceuticals quarterly call and webcast to discuss the company's financial results for the third quarter of the 2019 fiscal year ending June 30th, 2019, and corporate update. Participants are now in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. At this time, I would like to remind our listeners that remarks made during this call may state management's intentions, hopes, beliefs, expectations, or predictions of the future. These are forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties. Forward-looking statements on this call are made pursuant of the safe harbor provisions of the federal securities laws. These forward-looking statements are based on Delmar's current expectations, and actual results could differ materially. As a result, you should not place undue reliance on any forward-looking statements. Some of the factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those contemplated, such as forward-looking statements, are discussed in the periodic reports Delmar Pharmaceuticals files with the Securities and Exchange Commission. These documents are available in the investor section of the company's website, www.delmarpharma.com. On the Securities Exchange Commission website, we encourage you to review these documents. Joining me on the call today from the Delmar management team are Mr. Saeed Zarabian, President and CEO, Mr. Scott Prale, Chief Financial Officer, and Greg Johnson, Head of Clinical and Operations. Following the company's prepared remarks, the call will be opened up for a question and answer session. And it is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. Saeed Zarabian.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to join us on today's teleconference. The third quarter of our fiscal year was an extremely active and important period for the company, and I'm pleased to have the opportunity to update everyone in detail, both clinical and corporate development fronts. Clearly of paramount importance was maintaining the continued advancement of our two Phase 2 trials while navigating through challenging corporate matters. To this end, I'd like to comment on the status of Allo-83's two Phase 2 biomarker-driven clinical trials for MGMT unmethylated glioblastoma and to address the rationale behind the previously announced reverse stock split. As previously stated, the near-term development emphasis in terms of human skills and cash resource allocation for Allo-83, our therapeutic platform, is on the 60%+ patient population with the MGMT unmethylated status, who get measurably inferior results with the temozolomide, which is the current standard of care approved therapy for GBM. I'm pleased to report that both Phase 2 studies are advancing as planned, and in fact, the open-label first-line temozolomide-naive MGMT unmethylated GM study at Sun Yat-sen University Cancer Center in China achieved the halfway enrollment point. Additionally, our Phase 2 study at MD Anderson Cancer Center has now enrolled 47 of the originally planned 48 patients. Regarding our first-line trial, the patients in this trial are being treated with Allo-83 in combination with radiotherapy as a potential alternative to temozolomide and the radiation regimen, which is the current first-line standard of care for this patient population. The study's principal clinical goals are to confirm the safety of the 3-day, every 21-day Allo-83 dosing regimen in combination with radiotherapy and to investigate progression-free and overall survival outcomes of the combination of Allo-83 and radiotherapy. Again, focus purely on MGMT unmethylated GBM patients. At this point, I'll turn the call over to Mr. Greg Johnson, Head of Clinical and Operations for the company, to provide a detailed view of our ongoing and newly enhanced clinical trial strategy. Greg?
Thank you, Saeed. We'll start with the open-label first-line temozolomide-naive MGMT unmethylated GBM study, which is being conducted at Sun Yat-sen University Cancer Center in China. The study is targeted to enroll up to 30 patients. It's a single-arm, open-label study testing Allo-83 in combination with standard radiotherapy in GBM patients who have the unmethylated promoter of the methylguanine DNA methyltransferase gene, or MGMT. An estimated 60%+ of GBM patients possess an unmethylated MGMT gene, which confers a more limited response to current standard of care treatment, as well as a lower survival probability. As of February 15, 2019, the data cutoff point for our poster that was presented at AACR's annual meeting in April 2019, 15 patients have been enrolled. In terms of where we stand regarding result status, I'm pleased to report that for the 15 patients enrolled as of February 15th, 11 had completed their prospectively planned magnetic resonance imaging scans and have had their initial assessment for tumor progression. Tumor progression is based on the trial investigator's clinical and radiologic assessment according to the Response Assessment in Neuro-Oncology, or RANO, criteria. Of these 11 patients, 5 were assessed by the principal investigator as having a complete response, 3 of whom were based on significant tumor shrinkage, and 2 of whom were based on their tumors continuing to remain below measurable level from post-surgery baseline MRI to post-cycle 3 MRI. Additionally, 6 patients were assessed as having stable disease. Of the 4 remaining patients, 1 sadly passed away prior to the post-cycle 3 MRI, and 3 had not been on study long enough to reach their planned post-cycle 3 MRI. Also, as of the February 15th cutoff date, 12 of the 15 enrolled patients were still alive. Similar to prior experience, myelosuppression has been the most common adverse event observed. Two dose-limiting toxicities have been reported. Both were thrombocytopenia, one at the 40 mg per meter squared per day dose and one at the 30 mg meter squared per day dose. As we head into the fourth quarter of our fiscal year, we are looking forward to observing the trial's progress, which is being conducted under the terms of our collaboration with Guangxi Wuzhou Pharmaceuticals. Moving on to the Phase 2 second-line Avastin-naive study being conducted at MD Anderson Cancer Center, which we refer to as the MDACZ study. The quarter proved to be an instrumental period of progress for this study, which is evaluating if treatment of VAL-83 improves overall survival for those patients who progressed on temozolomide compared to an historical control. As of March 13th, the data cutoff point for our poster that was presented at AAC's annual meeting in April, 47 patients have been enrolled in the study. The dosing levels used in the study have continued to demonstrate a safety profile well within the existing safety monitoring guidelines described in the study protocol. And similar to prior clinical experience, myelosuppression has been the most common adverse event observed. At AACR, we also reported that per investigator assessment at the end of cycle 2 for the MDACC study, 9 out of 35 patients, or 25.7%, initially receiving the 40 mg meter squared dose exhibited stable disease, and 4 out of 10 patients, or 40%, who initially received the 30 mg dose exhibited stable disease, and 2 patients had not yet reached the end of cycle 2 at that time. The next major update regarding our clinical development strategy is that the MD Anderson Cancer Center's Institutional Review Board approved the trial protocol amendment to expand the currently underway study to include an additional maintenance stage population, also referred to as an adjuvant therapy treatment group. Maintenance stage GBM provides the greatest opportunity to control disease progression after radiation therapy and represents a larger addressable GBM market opportunity for VAL-83, given patients are typically healthier and as such are able to optimally benefit therapeutically from increased treatment cycles compared to the recurrent treatment setting. Maintenance GBM patients may be able to receive 12 or more cycles of VAL-83 versus 5 or 6 cycles for recurrent GBM patients. The additional maintenance stage treatment group is expected to enroll up to 24 newly diagnosed GBM patients who have completed chemoradiation treatment with temozolomide, which is commonly referred to as TMZ, without the continued TMZ maintenance therapy as provided for on the label. The trial will determine if intervention prior to TMZ maintenance therapy offers clinical benefit and extends the time to recurrence as compared to TMZ maintenance. I'd like to emphasize that this protocol amendment is significant because when we take into context with the ongoing Phase 2 trial in newly diagnosed patients with MGMT unmethylated GBM being conducted at Sun Yat-sen University Cancer Center, it expands our evaluation range of VAL-83 as a potential treatment for unmethylated GBM patients to include newly diagnosed, maintenance stage, and recurrent patients. In addition, the protocol amendment provides for enrollment of up to 35 additional patients at a dose of 30 mg per meter squared for the ongoing recurrent patient trial arm to enable the trial arm to maintain the originally planned statistical powering of 48 patients. As previously disclosed, we have lowered the dose in this study from 40 mg per meter squared to 30 mg per meter squared. Upon completion of the study, 13 will have had the 30 mg per meter squared and 35 will have had the 40 mg per meter squared. By potentially adding 35 additional patients at 30 mg, this will result in a total of 48 patients receiving the 30 mg dose. At this point, I'll turn things back over to Saeed.
Thank you, Greg. As you hopefully know, we have remained consistent in our conviction that VALO-83 is a platform asset with the potential to treat multiple solid tumors in a broad range of oncology indications. This belief is anchored by the ongoing data we're collecting from our current trials, along with the more than 40 clinical trials previously completed by the National Cancer Institute. With this in mind, coupled by the need to start preparing for VALO-83's Phase 3 trials, I'm extremely pleased with our recent established formal scientific advisory board with world-class neuro-oncology experts. The chair of our new SAB is Dr. Napoleon Ferrara. Many of you already know Dr. Ferrara as a DelBar board member, and he's best known as a world-renowned molecular biologist whose pioneering work on the identification of VEGF led to the development of Avastin, Roche's multi-billion-dollar cancer agent indicated for treatment of GBM as well as numerous other solid tumors. Dr. Ferrara is maintaining his role as a member of the board of directors while also serving as the chairman of our newly constituted SAB. The four prominent neuro-oncology experts who have joined our SAB are Dr. John DeGroote, chairman ad interim of Department of Neuro-Oncology at MD Anderson Cancer Center, and an expert in glioma biology and angiogenesis, which is the key area of clinical development for VALO-83, the company's lead asset. Second, Dr. David Reardon, clinical director of the Center for Neuro-Oncology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and a professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School. Third, Dr. Timothy Cloesi, professor of neurology at David Geffen School of Medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a member of the UCLA Brain Research Institute and Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center. And finally, Dr. Nicholas Butowski, a neuro-oncologist practicing at UCSF Medical Center in San Francisco, California, and director of translational research in neuro-oncology and a researcher at the Brain Tumor Cancer Center. In my opinion, the presence of these neuro-oncology experts on our scientific advisory board will materially help and be utilized to not only help us with our currently ongoing trials at MD Anderson Cancer Center and Sun Yat-sen University, but also to help us with the possible transition of our current Phase 2 trials to their respective high-value creation phase as a Phase 3 stage chemotherapy. Before turning the call over to Scott, who will provide the financial results, I'd like to comment on the recent reverse stock split implemented on May 8, 2019. As you may recall, we received notification from NASDAQ back in December of 2018 regarding a non-compliance with a minimum bid price requirement. We promptly filed an 8K noting that NASDAQ has given us an extension until June 25, 2019 to regain compliance. While we remain steadfast in the belief that at some point the markets will appreciate VALO-83's ongoing clinical results from our studies, we needed to take action to prevent a delisting and as such embarked on a 1-for-10 stock split which became effective on May 8th. As a result of the reverse stock split, every 10 pre-split shares of common stock outstanding became one share of a common stock. The reverse stock split also proportionally reduced the number of shares authorized common stock from 70 million to 7 million shares, and also applied to common stock issuable upon the exercise of our outstanding warrants and stock options. Furthermore, in order to provide sufficient capital to advance both of our Phase 2 trials through their estimated planned completion date in mid-calendar 2020, we have filed a registration statement with the SEC for a rights offering, which we believe is the optimal way forward by allowing our current shareholders the option to participate in the financing to enable our next stage of advancement and development. And finally, as I'm sure you know, we've also filed the proxy material for our annual meeting of stockholders to be held on June 26, 2019. At this time, I'll turn the call over to Scott, who will provide a summary of our financial profile for quarter ended March 31, 2019. Scott?
Thank you, Saeed. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I'm going to provide a high-level review of our financial results for the 3 and 9 month periods ended March 31, 2019. I'd like to remind everyone that our full financial results for the quarter ended March 31, 2019 are available in our Form 10-Q filed with the SEC at sec.gov, and this SEC filing is also available on our website at delmarpharma.com under the Investors tab. For the 3 months ended March 31, 2019, the company reported a net loss of approximately $1.7 million, or 67 cents per share, compared to a net loss of approximately $2.9 million, or $1.31 per share for the quarter ended March 31, 2018. Research and development expenses decreased to approximately $736,000 during the 3 months ended March 31, 2019, from approximately $1.8 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2018. The decrease was largely attributable to a decrease in clinical development costs, intellectual property, personnel, and preclinical research during the 3 months ended March 31, 2019, compared to the 3 months ended March 31, 2018. General and administrative expenses decreased during the current 3 months to approximately $936,000 from approximately $1.2 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2018. This was largely due to a decrease in non-cash share-based compensation expense, professional fees, and travel, partially offset by higher personnel costs in the current quarter compared to the prior quarter. For the 9 months ended March 31, 2019, the company reported a net loss of approximately $5.5 million or $2.27 per share, compared to a net loss of approximately $8.8 million, or $4.41 per share for the 9 months ended March 31, 2018. For the current 9 month period, research and development expenses decreased to approximately $2.7 million from approximately $5.9 million for the 9 months ended March 31, 2018. This decrease was largely attributable to a decrease in clinical development costs, personnel, preclinical research, intellectual property, and travel during the current 9 months compared to the prior 9 months. General and administrative expenses were approximately $2.8 million for the 9 months ended March 31, 2019, compared to approximately $2.9 million for the 9 months ended March 31, 2018. This decrease was largely due to lower professional fees and travel, partially offset by higher personnel and non-cash share-based compensation expense during the 9 months ended March 31, 2019, compared to the 9 months ended March 31, 2018. If anyone has any questions or like more detailed information, I'll be happy to answer them during the Q&A session at the end of the call. I'd like now to pass the call back to Saeed. Saeed?
Thank you, Scott. I would just like to conclude by thanking our longstanding shareholders for your continued support. All of us at the management and board levels remain steadfast in our belief in the clinical development strategy for Valor83, our first-in-class platform asset. We continue to take the necessary steps to enhance the ability to evaluate the potential indications in a timely and cost-effective manner while we diligently advance the current Phase 2 trials, which are nearing completion. We're all mindful of the challenges the company has been dealing with as a microcap in the biotech space, but truly believe that we're on track to transition to our next phase of growth. I will now turn the call over to the operator to commence the question and answer section of the conference call.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and 1 to ask a question. And we can pause a few moments to allow questions to enter the queue. And it appears we have no further questions at this time. We'll go ahead and turn it back over to you, Saeed.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We will update as we do usually after the end of the quarter. The next formal update will be presented after the June 30th end of our fiscal year and the fourth quarter. And we thank you for participating on this call. Bye-bye.